The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Welcome to the She Word, conversations women rarely have but really should. My name is Sasha. I'm your host for this edition of the She Word, the Young Women's Edition, where we continue giving young women the voice that they deserve. Today's show is young women and eating disorders, and it's definitely not an easy conversation to be having, but an important one for the Young Women's Edition, given that eating disorders are most prevalent among women aged 15 to 24. So without further ado, I'm joined here today by three incredible ladies who have all experienced eating disorders in their own ways, whether it's directly or working with them on a professional level. We've got Maya Fraser, previously on the hilarious Young Women, Sex and Relationships show, a 22-year-old who had experiences with anorexia for most of her life. Rosalie Muscat, a former bodybuilder who had an eating disorder at 27 years old, and got out of it at 35. And finally, Rozan Bohajar, our wise words for today's show, a psychologist who works closely with eating disorders at Darken Al-Sahtek. Ladies, thank you all so much for joining me here today for such an important conversation. Now, could you introduce yourselves a bit, maybe say something that I left out? Maya, I think you can start us off, okay, given that you know the drill.
Okay. So as Sasha said, I'm Maya, 22. I'm a marketing executive. I think that's my job role. I forgot what it's called, but I work in marketing. And I like my TikTok and social media. And that probably played into a part of the discussion today, but we'll get into it later.
Thank you.
Yeah, I am Rosalie, 37 years old. I'm a mommy of two children, boy and a girl. I'm a former biology teacher. Actually, I taught biology for 6 years at an old boys school. Then I moved on to the medical device industry, and I am now a medical writer. I've done that for the past 7 years and still going strong. Yeah, former bodybuilder and finally recovered, yeah, from binge eating disorder, and looking forward to sharing my experience with all.
I can't wait to hear, honestly, because I mean, from the second you told me, being a bodybuilder and also having an eating disorder, there's a lot to unpack.
Yes, there is.
And Rozan?
Hi, I'm Rozan. I'm a psychologist by profession. And I've been working in mental health services for some years now. And I'm also working at Kanal Sahtek, Dar Kanal Sahtek, which is a center for the treatment of eating disorders and obesity in Malta. It's based in Mtaifa.
So, before we go into our own experiences, I just want to start us off with some statistics. So, eating disorders are most prevalent among young women aged 15 to 24. Studies indicate that up to 9% of women in this age group will experience an eating disorder, such as anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, or binge eating disorder at some point in their lives. Social media and societal pressures significantly impact the development of eating disorders among young women. About 70% of young women report feeling that societal pressures to be thin contribute to their eating disorder. A survey conducted among young women revealed that 50% had engaged in unhealthy weight control behaviors, such as skipping meals, fasting, smoking cigarettes, vomiting, or taking laxatives, according to the World Health Organization. And finally, despite the seriousness of eating disorders, only 1 in 10 women with an eating disorder receives treatment. And less than half of those who do receive treatment receive the appropriate care for their specific disorder. So, Rozan, I want to go directly to you. Do you have any reaction to these statistics, being someone who works within the sector?
Yes, so it's, we usually associate eating disorders with women. There is an understanding, there is, in terms of these even statistics, these are indicated. However, in Malta, in a recent study, which was conducted also by Darken Al-Sahtek and the university, amongst children, actually, between the ages of 10 and 16, We found that 5.5% of children that age, and I'm saying children, not only women, could be passing through an eating, could be having an eating disorder. So this is something, this was a recent study. And what we also found in this study is that, I mean, the prevalence rate at that age, at a young age between boys and girls, I mean, it's true that the prevalence rate in females is a bit higher, but the boys nowadays are also incurring eating disorders as well and are at risk. With regards to the societal pressures and this idea of having, I mean, it is also a known indicator that, of course, social media influences, not just social media influences, but also this pressure to be thin amongst our societies is also one of the contributors to. It's not the only one, of course, to developing an eating disorder, but it's a known factor, like this drive to have the perfect body or to this constant comparison between, you know, people. So yes, this is these are my initial reactions to that, perhaps.
And I want you to so. I want to lay some groundwork before we start going into personal experiences. So I want you to start by explaining what eating disorders are and the different types and how do they typically manifest in young women.
Okay. So eating disorders are, I mean, not a lifestyle choice, of course. They're mental health difficulties. There are different types, mainly anorexia, like it's been mentioned there, anorexia nervosa, bulimia, binge eating disorder. Then we have ARFID, which is avoidant and restrictive food intake disorder. And there's also another section, which is eating disorders that are not otherwise specified, basically. So these are, when we speak about eating disorders, we are basically speaking about these disorders. When it comes especially to anorexia, I mean, these disorders are very serious. They can become very serious because in mental health, these can be the illnesses that can actually be fatal. So especially when it comes to anorexia, because obviously there is a lot of restriction. I mean, the symptoms can overlap between the disorders. However, of course, there are different criteria that professionals and psychiatrists and doctors use to diagnose an eating disorder. So for each one, there is a set of criteria that is used. However, of course, there is a characteristic of disordered eating, but it's not only about not eating or eating too much, but this is about how people cope or how they use food to cope with their feelings, how to cope with their, it's a form of behavior, like how to cope with that, or with some situation that's going on in their lives. So it's, I mean, we're not simply talking about eating or not eating here, but we're talking about something that is actually a diagnosed difficulty.
You've sparked a lot of more follow-up questions for me, but I think we'll get to them a bit later into the show. I want to start diving into your own personal experience. And Rosalie, like, I have so many questions. So you're a former bodybuilder.
Yes.
And you battled an eating disorder for 8 years.
Yes. So before we start off, bodybuilding was not the trigger for my binge eating disorder. It was just a bad decision at that point in time, given my mental health at the moment, because bodybuilding in itself, it's a healthy sport, right? But me being the perfectionist that I am, I had to go into competitive bodybuilding, which involves a period of extremely restrictive dieting. And given the baggage I had, that was not a very good decision at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so during COVID, when gyms closed, it was, I think, around March 2020, I was at home and I was so depressed because I was binge eating and I had no space to release what I had consumed, because you mentioned there's no purging per se in binge eating, but my purge was the gym. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I ate so much, I feel horrible, I feel disgusting. That was the feeling, disgusting. But then I used to go to the gym and sort of spend hours doing cardio and weight training, because at the back of my mind, I had calories to burn.
Like to release them.
Yes. Yes. So that was my purge. My eating disorder started at home, basically. My mother is a covert narcissist. I'm not proud to say it, but those are the facts. And the fact that I used to get a lot of unnecessary body shaming comments back at home, even at a very tender age, like statistics mentioned, the teenage years, you know, those tender age where when you view someone as being your safe space, what they say sticks and it cannot be undone. So the moment someone you love comments that your tummy looks funny, you make it your life mission to get rid of it, because in your mind, there's something wrong with you. Mm-hmm. And having low ab belly fat is Mediterranean.
Right? True.
It's our hormones, it's our body composition. We have hips, thighs, and lower tummy. That's the way we are. So yeah, then I started with a period of restrictive eating. My ideal weight is 63 kilos. I was even down to 50.
Wow.
And I wasn't happy. Mm-hmm. I used to look at the mirror and still see that, you know, 1 inch of fat that I had.
So this was when you were bodybuilding?
Before. I was bodybuilding. Before. Bodybuilding came later when I thought it was a good decision, you know, because it helped me keep on track. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had a coach, I had someone to answer to, so I had to keep on track. Mm-hmm. That's why I went into competitive bodybuilding and not just kept it, you know, the healthy type of bodybuilding, like going to the gym, doing your squats, doing your lunges, you know, doing your cardio, eating healthy. That's what, in essence, bodybuilding is. Mm-hmm. But I had to take it to the extreme because my brain needed something extreme to cope with the mental issues I was struggling with at the time. Yeah.
This is exactly what you said as well, how eating disorders end up developing as a kind of response to something else, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So yeah, I was down to 50 kilos. I looked skin and bones. Literally, I have photos and I look at them and I think to myself, I was so skinny. And yet I looked at the mirror and I saw someone not skinny. And I was unhealthy. You could see it in my face, you know. I had a very protruded jaw and I looked really old for my age. I wasn't healthy. But in my mind, that needed to be done, you know. And then I got married because I wanted a mermaid dress, right? So I molded my body to fit into the dress instead of purchasing a dress, you know, to highlight
your features.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. No. I wanted the mermaid dress. I wanted the model-like dress, you know, and I molded my body to fit the dress, not vice versa.
Wow.
Then obviously after the wedding, I had my first binge fit because I was restricting so much because, yeah, I had a goal. Mm-hmm. And again, this was before bodybuilding. So bodybuilding came, I think, 3 years after I got married. And I was into CrossFit and waking up at 5 and doing my run, my 5K with my Fitbit and my fitness pal and counting every calorie. And if it didn't fit my calorie count, I did not eat it, even if I was craving it. And that's where the binging starts then, because all of a sudden, when I found myself alone with no supervision, like my husband would be out or whatever, that's where it used to start. and I used to eat, right? And I used to remember what I ate, go to the grocery store next door and replace the food.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. 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 So if I ate a particular brand of chocolate, which was my husband, because I never bought chocolate or any treats for myself, but my husband did, you know, as it should. So I used to eat his stuff. And for him not to notice, I used to quickly run to the grocery next door and replace it.
There's so much to unpack here, and we'll come back to it as well, because there's also a lot of shame in this, right?
Exactly. No, I used to feel disgusting.
Mm-hmm. So, Maya, like, you were previously on the show, we're also colleagues, but when I released a call for this show, you reached out to me yourself, and you told me you've been battling anorexia for most of your life. And this is your first time talking about this essentially on such a public platform. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a bit about your journey and maybe how it has brought you to you now, where you are now?
Well, I don't really know when it started, because I think it's just been such a part of my life without even realizing it. Like, I didn't even notice I had anorexia up until I was about 18. And I only noticed because I'd see TikToks of like girls posting about things that were very much like not healthy, and I was like, lol, that's so me, and repost. And then my friends would be like, that's not okay, that's not normal. Or I'd be like, I'm only gonna eat chicken nuggets, and my like ex, well, now is my ex, my boyfriend at the time, so be like, that's all you eat, huh? Like, that's not okay. I'm like, if I don't eat that, then I'm gonna get fat. So, and he's like, why do you care so much? So when I had, as I got older, other people noticing these things, that's how I noticed. Had no one said anything, I probably would still be probably underweight and probably have no idea I'm actually struggling with the thing, even though I studied psychology at sixth form. So when I was even studying that and reading the different food disorders and eating disorders that you had mentioned, I remember reading them, I'm like, oh, I have a bit of trait of that, I have a bit of that. So I don't have the disorders, because I think those are normal things, you know, because I used to think since I can pick what I have from each one, it must be normal. That's how my brain used to be. But I mean, I've had it since a very young child. Like, I used to always try and eat little amounts of food, so I've always been very petite, very small. So naturally I used to get comments since I was a kid, like, oh, come in Zaira, how sweet, you're so small, like all those. So then those stick in your head, you're like, oh, I'm so small and cute, like, I can't lose that because I won't be cute. That's from when I'm a kid. And then, like, when it came to food and stuff, like, my biological father used to give me a much bigger plate of food than I could take at my younger ages. I think that's probably a Maltese parent feature, I don't know. But my dad used to make me basically eat as much as possible, to the point where I would genuinely either throw up or feel so sick I'd start crying, begging him to stop feeding me, basically. And I think from then, the feeling of throwing up is one of my biggest fears. I have that fear, emetophobia or something like that. I have my biggest fear. In fact, I think if it wasn't for that fear, I probably would have developed bulimia. Like, in all honesty, I think I would have. But thanks to my fear, I think I was saved in a sense from that. But the feeling of vomiting freaks me out so much, because I also have generalized anxiety disorder. So those play into it. In fact, when you mentioned it, I was like, yeah, that's me. Like, most of my eating stuff comes from, I would assume, the anxiety I have carried around with me. So the feeling of vomiting used to freak me out so much, I'd have a panic attack and then I wouldn't eat, because I'd rather feel the pain of the burning in your stomach than the feeling of acid coming up. I'd rather feel it just in the pits of my stomach. And it got really bad, I'd say, COVID times as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of have no choice, but like, you're stuck in a room, you have very little outlets and things like that. So I think a lot of people probably went through it majorly at that time. I'm sure we're not the only people.
In fact, there were many people on social media during COVID complaining that they gained weight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even with mental health, I mean, speaking for myself, my mental health was definitely the worst during the peak of COVID.
Yeah. When
we couldn't go to university, we couldn't meet our friends. Honestly, some people speak of it as a good time, but it was probably the worst time of my life. And I hear of a lot of experiences that emerged from how life had become and, you know, even dealing with all of the changes back then.
Yeah.
But like, so what I'm noticing is that it was a characteristic in your life, which led to you, like, it took you so long then to actually realize that
it's a problem.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
Take care and indulge in the liberation of smooth, hair-free skin. Browns, empowering wellness through its excellence in laser hair removal.
Usually when it comes to eating disorders, it does take a while for a person to realize that they do have a problem. Mm-hmm. So it's usually the other people around that individual start noticing that there are difficulties. Because obviously, like both of you have been saying this, it's like it engulfs you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So right now we're talking about it in terms of for a bit of facts or something, but in reality, when a person is experiencing it, there it's like the perception is changes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and especially for example in anorexia, for example, there are rules that need to be followed in binging. There are rituals, mm-hmm, that are usually associated, like you've mentioned. So all of this, it's like, it engulfs the person, and everything starts revolving around the eating disorder, mm-hmm, and the needs of the disorder rather than the person's own needs.
Mm-hmm.
So it does take a while for a person to actually seek support and to actually realize that this needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and apart from that, like we've been saying, recovery is also quite a long process.
I guess because it's associated with something which is so basic for human existence, it becomes so normalized. And then for the individual going through it.
Yes, I mean, we're dealing with something that, you know, we actually need.
Exactly, it sustains us.
I mean, we cannot go or live without food.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it a bit more complex. Though, like we were saying before, there's a lot of work that has to do with thoughts, or with also addressing thoughts and behaviors and emotions that are associated with this. And also, like you've also alluded to this, perhaps underlying traumas or experiences or other disorders that are also existing alongside.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously you work with these issues and you see them from a bit of a different lens than someone who's experiencing them. But I want to hear a bit about your work and what motivated you to start focusing on eating disorders as a psychologist.
It's something that has a huge impact on the life of a person. And of course, in a way, through my work, I was hoping to support the people who actually are going through this as well. And sometimes, although in Malta and being such a small country, we do give a lot of importance and we do have an actual center for the treatment of eating disorders. Not only here, I mean, there are other professionals, other psychologists, psychiatrists, who do not work at Dark and Unsahted, but are also working in this field as well. But to me, I mean, what attracted me to this was, you know, I mean, part of my work also with mental health issues, and also to be able to support people as they are going through this journey of recovery as well.
I want to ask you too. How did you know? How did you realize that something was wrong?
Well, because what I was doing didn't feel okay. And secondly, I never saw anyone else do it. And I realized, because as we were discussing, binge eating is mainly secretive. You do it behind closed doors. That's where Chifiri, it goes wild. But when I used to be invited to social gatherings, I used to hate it. I used to invite I used to invent every excuse under the sun not to go. But sometimes, you know, especially if it's a work or a business lunch or a business dinner, you have to attend. I used to binge during these activities. For example, at the office where I worked once, they brought pizza during our lunch break. And I remember I had fasted for 2 days because I counted calories and I extrapolated back to how many meals I had to skip to eat one pizza. But come the day, I didn't eat just one pizza. I shoved every type of pizza I could find because I couldn't control myself. You can't stop. You know you're doing it. Mm-hmm. I was conscious I was doing it, but I couldn't stop. And I was ashamed because looking at the others, I mean, they all, you know, like civilized people, everyone had their slice, everyone had their portion, and nobody made a big deal of it as much as I was, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's where I realized. And yeah, one fine day, I woke up and I said, I don't want to feel like this anymore. I was at my prime of bodybuilding because in 2019, in August 2019, I had my first international competition. I competed in Greece and I placed fourth. I missed bronze by 1 point.
Oh, wow.
I was really happy. It was a big achievement for me, you know? And I sort of caught the stage bug, as they referred to it, you know, in bodybuilding. So I wanted to compete the next year and the year after that and the year after that. But it was a very destructive sport to engage in, mm-hmm, at the time. And I used to hate having check-ins with my coach because while you're on prep and while you're competing every so often, like every week or every 2 weeks, it depends on the stage you're in, you need to send progress pics, so body pics in four different poses, front, side, and back, to your coach. And knowing that I had just binge and my body used to inflame because obviously consuming all that salt, all that fat, you know, in one sitting, my body used to absorb a lot of water and I used to look puffy. I used to gain a lot of weight, like 5 kilos overnight, but it wouldn't have been fat. It would have been water and inflammation, you know? And I would take diuretics, to flush out all that water, you know, so my coach wouldn't realize what I was doing. But I used to work with a truly professional Greek coach. He used to notice. He was like, listen, what have you done? Tell me, you know? And having to be accountable to someone and having to restrict. If I wanted a piece of cheese, I couldn't have it because it wasn't on plan, you know? And I decided that I didn't want to feel like that, mm-hmm, anymore. So the minute I decided that I didn't want to feel disgusting anymore, I sought help, a lot of therapy. It involved allowing myself not to restrict. So I went through a period of eating whatever I wanted, mm-hmm, in how much I wanted. And I gained weight. I gained a lot of weight. I gained 22 kilos. But that was part of the healing. Luckily, in inverted commas, it was during COVID. So I had the excuse of hiding indoors because people had a certain perception of me. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the bodybuilder. I was the muscular. I was the wow. You know, I was the girl on the magazine covers that everyone wanted. And all of a sudden, I looked like a blob. A shapeless blob. But that was part of the recovery. And then my body, you know, sort of learned that it's okay. I'm not starving anymore. There's food. I can eat it. And now I allow my body to be in its natural weight. Mm-hmm. I don't own a pair of weighing scales anymore in the house. Because before it used to be like every morning on the weight scale. Same. Taking a photo, keeping record.
Literally same. Mm-hmm. Same.
Obsessive it was.
Mm-hmm. And I can see as well how, you know, having taken on the label of a bodybuilder, it added so much more pressure.
Yes, and my Instagram was all full of bikini pics, you know, and gym pics and muscles and striations. And all of a sudden, that all went away. So it also involved me getting to know my new self, you know, and getting comfortable with Rosalie without her muscles.
Do you want to add on something to this?
I realized I needed help. Like I had told you, people started noticing small things. And then it came to other things like I'd shower, wash my hair, and clumps and clumps and clumps of hair were falling out. And I remember taking a photo. I just saw this photo today, coincidentally. And my hair was like a big mound like this in the corner of my shower. And I wrote on the snap to send to my best friend in the UK. It's like, I don't think this much hair is supposed to fall off of my head. And like, I was making light of these things. So I really didn't think I had an issue at that point. Sent it to my friend. She's like, oh my God, Mo, like, what the hell are you doing? I was like, I'm just saying, like, it's not that deep. Like, okay, molting season. Everyone loses hair. No, you don't lose hair in that amount every shower. Like, that's not okay. My hair used to be, I'm still like not at my 100% with my hair, for example. My hair used to be thick, super, super curly, super like healthy and glossy. And my hair at that point was dull, thin. My hair would barely stay in curls. Okay, yes, I was also straightening it. But at the same time, if I left it for like a month, it would still be like just a... And that was because I wasn't eating. So my body was just like, what the hell is going on? And then I also noticed how... Literally, anytime anyone mentioned going out, I would freeze. I'd start thinking, okay, so my excuse is I don't have money. So I used to say that, I don't have money, guys. But then they'd be like, we are calm, it's fine. I'm like, okay, I'd go. Now they know in their heads that I'm broke. So if I don't eat, it's not questionable. So I used to be there like chilling and they'd be like, you sure you don't want something? I'm like, guys, I'm broke. Broke. And they're like,
I used to do that too, like sit and watch them eat.
Exactly. And I just used to be there like this. They'd be like, you want a chip? I'm like,
no.
But I genuinely, the thought of eating would make me start gagging. So I'm like, guys, don't even show me. Like, it got to the point, this is when I really, really noticed. I was out with my friends and their family and whatever, and they were all eating, and I ate a small portion of food. And the minute I felt full, my instant reaction, which I only realized was weird when people looked at me, was to just shove it away from me. So I ate, I put my plate down, I went like this, and I went, because I get this twitch where I genuinely, when I'm feeling full, my body starts tweaking. Like, it genuinely just starts, and I started doing that, and I pushed my plate away. And my friend's mom was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm full. Like, really nice meal, but like, I'm full. And they're like, you can't keep your plate in front of you. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, what? And then I realized, like, oh, if I look at everyone else, everyone's plate is in front of them comfortably. But if I even looked at the plate, the disgust I'd feel, it felt as if I put on a fat suit, which is not the case. Because never in my life have I been overweight. But I used to feel as if I was, and I used to feel like everyone's going to look at me. There's barely any food on my plate. Everyone's going to look at me. So I used to literally push it away and be like...
And again, going back to this, like, sentiment of shame as well surrounding food. She mentioned like how her hair was falling out, and I want to ask you more about the physical impacts of eating disorders.
Yes, as we said, I mean, alongside other symptoms, there are also the physical effects that eating disorders have. In terms of physical symptoms, there are several, and there are different ones. Differing according to...
I remember my period stopped.
Yes, in fact, I was going to mention that. So, again, it depends on which kind of eating disorder we're talking about. However, yes, impact like the period stopping, menstruation stopping, a lot of imbalances in terms of electrolytes and nutrients and all of that. Because obviously there's this... myth that I cannot have any fat in my body, but in reality, fat, I mean, is something that protects even our internal organs and all of
hormones
that.
So are made of fat,
and no? Yeah, and so it's like it's necessary, a bit of it, like everything else in needs to be in balance. And of course, I mean, the ultimate physical effect that, for example, anorexia could have on the body is organ failure, because obviously food is energy. So if we're not giving our bodies enough energy, then everything is going to be impacted. Even for example, anorexia, little hairs may grow actually in our skin, on the person's skin. So there are diverse physical effects. But of course, this is what makes it even more risky. And also, we've been talking about weight. Sometimes some eating disorders are present even when there is no apparent weight loss or weight gain. Of course, in most cases, there is some sort of loss or gain in terms of weight. However, we have to bear in mind that sometimes that this is not only about losing or gaining weight. And even culturally, food is something that is used even as a celebration sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and in Malta especially, we find...
We're Mediterranean.
Yes. If it's a celebration, there has to be food.
Dinner for everything.
Yes. I used to call Christmas fat season. I used to hate it.
Wow. As Loki still call it that.
Okay, so you're saying so many things. You're leading me onto a part which I want to explore. How eating disorders affect not just a person, but also their social life and their relationships. And I want to ask you... Like, did you notice any changes to your relationships while you were going through it? Or did you see any way that it could have affected your relationships?
No, I lost a lot of friends.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I couldn't keep a friendship because I remember one thing in particular, a memory that comes to mind. I used to work in a very popular cinema at the box office. I used to sell tickets, right? And the team, we were an all-women team. It started out brilliantly. I used to love going to my shift, even though it ended late, whatever. I was at university working, again, pre-bodybuilding days. But when I was during prep, during bodybuilding, I felt that these people did not support me. And why would they have, you know? I mean, I remember once I threw a tantrum, like a three-year-old, because a friend of mine brought pizza into the box office. And I took it as an insult and lack of support. I told her, you know, I'm on prep. Why did you bring this to the box office? And then looking back, I was like...
Was your own insecurity shining through, kind of, in
exactly.
That moment?
It was my fear of breaking my prep.
You're projecting onto the person.
Exactly. She had no fault. She had every right to bring pizza in there. She had every right to eat it. You know, I was the broken one, the damaged one at the time. Even with my husband as well. I mean, one particular year, our marriage struggled a lot because I was not in my right mind. You know, I used to be so nutrient deprived and so hungry because I used to restrict a lot that I used to lash out at my husband a lot. Once I remember again, I threw a tantrum crying in the car, literally bawling my eyes out. Because he went to the supermarket without telling me.
Every little thing gets to you at that
exactly.
point.
Exactly. Every little thing I blew out of proportion because I was not right in the head at that time. And when I actually took time to sit with my pain and with my struggle, then I started to realize that what I was doing, you know, thank God I'm married to a guy who has the patience of a saint. You know, who supported me, who realized that I was struggling and I needed help, and he was there for me through thick and thin. Love him so much.
You've both mentioned how you found support, even your friend helped to make you realize that something was wrong. But were there moments where you felt that you were particularly isolated or misunderstood?
I mean, most times I did feel like that. And like, for example, I come from a very big family, like, you know, the Sash, but like for everyone else, I come from a family of... we're six kids. I'm one of six. I'm the oldest one, so there's like a lot of responsibility on my back, and I'm very, very close with both of my parents, like super close, as in not my biological father, obviously, because I mentioned that, but I'm very, very close to my parents and my siblings. And as my eating disorder was growing, I was fighting with my siblings every day, like, as you were saying, every tiny thing used to irritate me. Every, like, if I don't know, like, my dad, he has, both of my parents have like two jobs. They're super, super busy, but they love work. That's why they're like very motivated people. So they have a very busy life. And in order to maintain that and also raising children, they used to have the meals of the week. Everyone knows, like, on Monday, it's pie. On Tuesday, it's it, blah, blah. Everyone knows it. And that's fine. That's good. We all had nutritious meals. We all had balanced meals, everything. However, if my father decides to tell me on Friday we're going to have pizza, I expect, are you fucking serious? Sorry. Are you freaking serious? I expect, are you freaking serious? He's like, what are you saying? Every Friday I do it, Maya. What's the problem? And I expect, no, because you know I don't even like pizza. I don't know why you're doing this. And I used to take it, as you were saying, offense. In my head, I'm like, he did it on purpose. He knows I hate pizza. He knows that's my favorite food. He knows. So what did I do? A lot of times I used to, if my dad wasn't looking or my mom wasn't looking, put the pizza, rip it a bit so I leave some crumbs on the table, put it in my pocket, go upstairs. I'd be like, dad, finished. Put my plate away, go upstairs and chuck the food out the balcony. So sorry to my parents because now they know I wasted a lot of food. But yeah, I used to do that a lot. And yeah, in terms of relationships, my relationship with my siblings completely deteriorated at a point. Me and my sister, who's 1 year younger than me, we did not speak whatsoever. She also was going through some stuff herself. Granted, everyone does. But mine was particularly like, I knew we weren't going to speak because of my own issues. And then with my mom, now that I'm older, I can say mom's my best friend because as a child, that's a bit weird. But like as an adult, my mom is my best friend and she's always supported me. And she noticed because I couldn't eat a simple meal. And I wouldn't, like if she told me, why are you not eating? I was like, shut up. You don't even know what the hell you're talking about. Shush. And she's like, don't talk to me like that. Granted, don't talk to your parents like that. But because I had this issue, anything she said to me was like she was instigating something. She wasn't. She was being a concerned mother. And I had got to the point where my mom was noticing my weight was dropping constantly and fast. And she told me one day, she was like, Maya, go on the scale right now. And obviously I went on the scale already 3 times in that day because that's all I used to do. I'm like, yeah, I know how much I weigh, mom. She's like, okay, what? I don't want to tell her. So she made me stand on it. She saw the number, and just for the sake of potential people struggling, I'm not going to mention any weights because I don't want anyone to start like thinking of that. Numbers are just numbers. But this weight was ridiculously below what it should have been. And my mom was like, if you do not gain 5 kilograms or whatever in a month, you are not seeing your boyfriend. To me, this was as if she ripped my fucking world from my hands. I was like, what? So she was my villain. I did not like my mom at all. I'm like, how dare she say that? I messaged my boyfriend at the time. I'm like, my mom's psycho. She just told me to gain weight. Laura, she's serious. And my boyfriend at the time was like, maybe you should. I don't know. I'm like, what the fuck? Sorry. What the frick? So for me, every single person mentioning anything to do with food and relationship, to me, horrible people. But in turn, when I reached a breaking point, because I believe everyone eventually does, my breaking point, I will never forget it because it was horrible on me and horrible on my mom. And this is when my relationship started fixing with my mom because I realized she's there to help. My dad had made us all burgers, and on purpose, I was like, Dad, I'm showering. Like, I'll eat my burger after because I didn't want my siblings to see me eat. They were late. They went upstairs. I heard that they were upstairs, so I went back down. I saw this burger. Now, it wasn't massive. It's a normal burger. I sat there, and I'm just like, playing with the fries and whatever, pushing them around, started eating a bit slowly. And then I came to the actual beef burger that I had to, eat. My dad's like, Maya, you've been sat down for 4 to 5 minutes. Like, eat. I'm like, I am going to eat. Look, leave me alone. He's like, okay, like, just eat though. Like, what's the big problem? My mom came out. You're not going to eat that? I'm like, I am. But the more you mention it, the more I didn't want to eat it. Because I'm like, why the fuck is everyone watching? Sorry. Why the
hell pressure.
Yeah, why is everyone watching me? Like, stop. And then eventually I was there and I tried to pick it up. And as I picked up, my hands were like this. And I just burst into tears. And my dad's like, oh, look, look. Because he just thought I was having like a girl moment. Enough. He just like, what the hell? And like ignored me, obviously. Because also as a dad, you don't really, like, he's there for me telling everything. But you're not as emotionally in tune with your daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the way you bounce makes me want to keep you around my mind. Me up and makes me get down on my, oh my, my, my.
This celebration is about those who come next, building on dreams and foundations. You get the context. For our people, our movement, not lost, but living, searching for a future filled with living, loving, and giving. It doesn't have to be about the great, the big, and the mighty. It can be about taking those small acts of kindness just a little less lightly. Making the most of our bodies, being thankful for each new day. The next 15 years is about the new creators, thinkers, movers, and shakers. But we need a helping hand. Are there any takers?
Safe to say that emotion isn't a strong point for most men, but anyway, it's a whole other conversation.
That's another discussion. But yes, so I ran to my mom's room. I remember I just like sprung open the door and cried to her. I'm like, I can't eat, mom. I can't. I haven't been eating. I don't know when's the last time I ate a meal. I've just been eating a few things to keep me going. And she's like, what, slow down. And I couldn't speak. I was blubbering, like just tears and tears. I'm like, I don't want to eat the burger. Please don't make me eat the burger, please. And she was like, Mo, you need to eat to survive. And that's when she started realizing. So she helped me calm down. I confided in her in every single thing, the way I had been eating, the way I'd been sneaking food and not sneaking food. And
this was at what age?
This was around 18. It was 18, 19. I was at my breaking point. And from there, my mom started helping me a bit because she's a personal trainer. And she obviously studies nutrition as well. So she started noticing, like, if you want to eat and be clean, because that was my issue. I'd eat something and I'd feel so disgusting after. And I explained this to her. She's like, if it's a matter of eating clean, I can help you. It's cool. And so she started helping me, monitoring what I'm eating and whatever. And I started gaining good weight. But then habit comes back and the process starts all over again, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something, to be fair and to be 100% honest and raw, I don't think I'm recovered. And I will say that, not proudly, but I will say that with a complete... no shame, because I feel like that's why I'm here. I'm not 100% recovered. And it's something that I've learned to kind of not live with, because I've given myself discipline. I know how to... I can recognize it now. If I'm falling back into a really bad point, I'm like, okay, stop. And I can kind of redirect myself. However, I do not think... I'm not confident enough to be like, I'm fine, I'm recovered, because I'm not, in my head anyway.
Do you think it's easy for these patterns to become kind of cyclical?
Yes. Full recovery is possible with the right support, with professional help. However, we're all vulnerable to experiencing mental health difficulties in reality. If we're going, for example, through stressful situations, etc., I mean, the risk, or our vulnerability rather than the risk, of having a mental health difficulty increases. Now, of course, if a person is going through an eating disorder, and for example, they're going through another stressful time, there is a risk that the eating disorder or the patterns of that reemerge. However, it also depends on what kind of support or what kind of treatment and how the person responds and collaborates in that treatment, that process of recovery as well. But recovery is always a journey.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not linear. Mm-hmm. So, even here, we're noticing we're talking about eating disorders as an umbrella term. But in reality, we're talking about two very different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And every experience of a person who is going through an eating disorder is unique. So, of course, sometimes some patterns may reemerge. However, even with therapy or with the treatment, I mean, of course, there is more awareness. And I mean, even Maya here said, now I am more aware.
Mm-hmm.
So I am more aware and I can redirect myself. And maybe I can also reach out if I am more aware.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm not aware that I have a problem at the beginning, at the first place, I will not seek support. So this is what we're saying at the beginning, that people who are going through these types of disorders sometimes don't realize that there is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And you've both been mentioning this as well.
Mm-hmm.
But so, yes, having more awareness, being able to notice when to reach out, how to support yourself, those are the things. And then and can of course promote the recovery as well for a person.
So we'll go back to recovery a bit before we close the show, but social media has been mentioned
yes
a lot already, but we haven't really delved into it. And I want to, I mean, it has been defined as a main trigger in this day and age for eating disorders, for sure. I want to share something as well. When I was a teenager, Tumblr was very popular back then. And there was this whole trend of having a thigh gap. It was really, really, really intense. And like you've mentioned, some people's bodies are simply made to look a certain way, exactly. That you're blessed with a flat stomach or you have a thigh gap effortlessly. And some bodies have a different shape, and that is completely normal. But when you have characteristics of a physical body that become a trend, which we're also seeing now in certain beauty standards, even with the rise of Botox and fillers and everything, many believe that social media is a key player in this, because we are constantly being fed an image of what perfection should look like. And it ends up throwing us into the cycle of wanting to change ourselves to fit into this image. So do you think that this was a specific trigger for you at some point? Do you think that...
I think it always is, to be honest, because as you said, I mean, we're young girls. Let me not generalize. I was a young girl, right? Watching television, and I used to be so easily impressed. But at this day and age, I know that most... even fitness photos are digitally manipulated.
Yes.
And they're so good that you can't tell, but they are. But they are. So what we're seeing is absolutely not, not even the bodybuilding. I mean, when I used to compete, the stage body is not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't keep that condition for longer than 2 weeks at max, because... the bodybuilding physique on stage, right? Very important. This is competitive bodybuilding. It's very hard to maintain. It's not realistic, and it's somewhat dangerous as well. But to the common folk, that's what you should look like. And it's very far from the truth. You know, I was listening to another podcast where I think it was a gynecologist talking, or someone specializing in female health. They were saying that females are not supposed to have abs, because the minute you start seeing your abs, it means that you went to a dangerously low body fat percentage, which is not necessarily true, because some people are genetically gifted. You know, I met these people, I know who they are, you know, I've socialized with them. So I know that there are people who are naturally blessed.
Yes, like my sister, for example. She had abs when she was 6 years old, just simply doing gymnastics, you know? So some people are gifted.
What do I mean? It means it's okay if you have a six pack, and it's okay if you don't have a six pack. Perfectly fine. And it took me ages to learn that, Javiri.
Yeah,
as I said, I went through a period of extreme depression, where I couldn't stomach the sight of myself in the mirror.
Same. Literally same.
And with me being pregnant and postpartum, which is another can of worms, you know, like, you're pregnant, oh, how pretty, everyone patting the belly, blah, blah, blah. And the minute you give birth, when are you going to start losing weight? Like, have you lost the baby weight? I just birthed a human. Please, you know, chill. Give me time to recover.
So much pressure.
After my first baby, I felt it more. After my second baby, like, I had already been through it, you know, so I just shut my ears, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to hear anything. And I just let the weight do its thing, you know. But yeah, I mean, judgment and people passing comments, that's definitely, I don't know if it's a Maltese thing, you know, come here, ya marida. So yeah, there's definitely added pressure of the society and social media.
Yeah. What do you think, Maya?
I definitely have a lot to say about this. You also work in social media.
Yeah. So as a child, as in child, I'd say teenager really, like preteen teenager, I noticed that since I was young, I realized that things I see on Instagram will influence me a certain way. So at that point, I'd say around 15, I had unfollowed every single celebrity.
Mm-hmm. I did that completely. With the fitness things after I decided to call it quits with everything cleaned off.
Exactly. I had completely wiped off any celebrity. But then I noticed my sister be like, oh, Kendall Jenner, did you see her legs? I wish my legs looked like Kendall. I was like, girl, what are you on about?
They're probably Photoshopped.
Honey. I used to be like, even if they weren't, like everyone's legs are different. And she, my sister, for example, my sister's stunning. Honestly, not being biased, she's genuinely such a beautiful woman. And her legs are a different shape than other people. Everyone has a different shape. But for example, genetically, our father has very like narrow calves. So does she. However, it doesn't look bad. It's in proportion with her body. But because Kendall is more athletic and whatever, my sister used to see Kendall, look at herself and be like, I'm horrible. And I was like, that is why I don't follow anyone, because I don't want that mentality. And so I used to tell her, don't follow these people. Now that I'm older and I kind of need to follow certain influencers and celebrities for the sake of my job and seeing how things are marketed and whatever, I follow them. But because I also went through my phase of trying to edit photos to see how I could potentially look if I didn't eat enough or whatever, I know how easy it is to make a picture look a certain way. I know because I used to do it so much so that you wouldn't notice. Mm-hmm. And I remember one time I edited abs on myself. I showed my boyfriend at the time. I'm like, look at this. And he's like, what the hell? Like, where did those come from? I'm like, Photoshop. And he's like, but it looks so real. I'm like, I know. Does that not make you think about what you're seeing on social media? I'm like, mm-hmm. Hello.
It's very dangerous when you have fitness people doing it because they are promoting mm-hmm. a life of healthy eating and going to the gym and yep. keeping fit. But then it's completely not transparent when they're actually editing their photos.
Yes.
Yep.
So it is not, as you said, it is not accessible. It is not possible to look like that. It is completely unrealistic.
Yep.
No.
When they are painting it as getting to it in a natural way.
Yep.
And especially these fitness influencers where their entire Instagram is based on this certain look. Mm-hmm. They were, all right, they probably passed through a phase where they looked like that, but they took so many images during that short time period that you're led to believe that they look like that all year round. Mm. They don't.
Or they only capture the good days because let's face it, we all get bloated.
Yeah.
Our body is constantly changing. I mean, when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, okay, who is it today?
Morning skinny. That's what mm-hmm. there's also that.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. In the morning, I used to wake up so dry, abs out, veins popping. And, and by the end of the day, I used to look completely different.
It's natural.
So, exactly. So even morning and night, let alone, you know, over a span of time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And especially being women as well, as our cycle is over 28 days or
when
something
I had
like
a cycle, exactly.
Yeah.
One thing I just want to say as well.
Yeah.
Something that's not spoken about a lot as TikTok is growing and becoming a bigger platform. I found this recently, actually. There are accounts called like bait accounts where they're like given a name, like, I don't know, some generic name, like, I don't know, Mary, John. And if when you get this account on your feed, it is a picture of, for example, a dog, and then it's a carousel, so you swipe, and then it's like, today I ate one meal, and then here's how you can do it, and it's a bunch of beige meals, like meals I call them, because it's like rice cakes and whatever, and it's people in the comments being like, thanks, now I have my meal inspiration. And there are communities on TikTok, especially, I'm sure there's other websites and whatever, but what I stumbled upon quite a few times in low points of my journey,
mm-hmm.
where there are groups of people online that validate these disorders and make you feel like what you have is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's a reality. I mean, some people would end up following, not simply on TikTok, but on other mm-hmm. Platforms, following these kind of groups or people or influencers. But of course, we're promoting something that is unhealthy.
Yeah.
However, especially if someone has this kind of disorder, some of these things, like you're saying, are seen as achievements,
mm-hmm. yes.
when in reality they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to, when we're talking about social media, I mean it's important because it can, you know, be a platform for sharing information and for even what we're doing now. But of course, we do really need to be educated enough to know and be aware enough to know when we need to filter this information.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this has to start from a young age because nowadays we're exposed to this from a very young age. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be some sort of education around this as well to help promote how to filter this information mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're nearing the end of the show, and I want to speak a bit about recovery and the supports that you can find. Particularly, like, what advice can you give to people who are supporting someone who is dealing with an eating disorder?
Be patient. Mm-hmm. Really, really, you need to be patient. And even if they seem like they don't want to help or they're not sticking to recovery, you need to remember it's not. Mm-hmm. You wake up and you're fine. And as you said before, the journey is not linear. So genuinely, I think patience is the main thing that people need to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I fully agree.
And perhaps also one of the things, because like we're saying even before, sometimes our conversations are a lot about food,
yeah.
about, you know...
And the way we talk about our bodies.
Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh. That's true.
And so sometimes even to compliment, you've mentioned, mm-hmm. one of you mentioned yeah. it before, it's like to compliment someone, it's like, you know, you've lost a lot of weight. Oh, wow.
So I love that yeah. comment. It was enabling it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but in reality... Some people wouldn't be, genuinely they wouldn't be aware, but our conversations sometimes are like that. Yeah. So we need to consider how we can, you know, compliment other people, not simply based on how they look or mm-hmm. what they're eating or based on the means, but also about their characteristics, their qualities, their talents, their achievements in other sectors. So there's a lot to talk about, not
I
simply.
I love your hair.
That is...
Yes, but... You know, sometimes these are, and especially for someone going through an eating disorder, these can be very triggering.
Yeah.
I mean, even in general, sometimes we end up thinking about it. Is this, do I really look like this? Did something really mm-hmm. change? So, and, you know, if someone is going through this, it becomes even harder. So this is one of the things that can support other people.
I also wanted to ask you, like, what do you believe needs to change in how society and the healthcare system, maybe on a local level, is addressing eating disorders?
Of course, awareness is key. So conversations like this, people understanding what, to support people and understanding what they are going through and what other people may be going through, and to empower more people to seek support, to reach out. There are services. In our case, we do have a center for the treatment of eating disorders. So it's available. And again, not simply, but other professionals are also available to seek support. So there is availability of the services there. We need perhaps to increase awareness and also to help to empower people to reach out and seek support when they need it. And also even for relatives or caregivers or significant others of people to know when they need also when something is becoming a problem. Unfortunately, sometimes eating disorders are overlooked in services. So maybe even in generic services, we do need to keep in mind how, you know, people with eating disorder may necessitate a different kind of support. So for example, if you're seeking treatment even for a physical problem, but then, you know, there is the issue of food intake that needs to be kept in mind as well. And one thing that we didn't mention at all is also that when there is a lot of restriction of food, it's a very important that a person seeks professional help to be able to increase the food intake gradually then, because there is a risk of something that we call refeeding syndrome. So this is very important as well to mention, because we mm-hmm. didn't mention
I had
it
that
before.
Yes, when I came back from competing in Greece, I ate so much that I ended up in hospital. In fact, yeah, with refeeding syndrome. They thought my kidneys were failing.
So what happens in this?
In my case, my body stored a lot of water up to a point where my ankles disappeared. They were just part of my legs. Mm-hmm. And even as I was walking, I could literally feel water held in my legs and in my ankles and in my face. Oh, I ballooned 12 kilos of water. And you could see it. I mean, I have pictures. Jifiri, my feet couldn't fit my shoes. And I didn't know what was going on, you know? And I snapped a picture and sent it to my dog. He's like, oh, my feet look funny. He said, run to the hospital now. And I was hospitalized for 3 days.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Oh, until I was fed vitamins, because apparently I had one particular vitamin, I can't remember which one, which was very, very low due to me not eating for an extended amount of time. I believe it was 16 weeks. And a lot of a sudden just eating whatever, you know, and I was hospitalized. And I remember one of my doctors coming in hospital, and he was, you know, telling me that I had feeling syndrome, blah, blah, blah. And he looked at me and he said, you're going to do this again, aren't you? Because at that point I was, they said, probably, yeah.
Oh, well, I'm mm-hmm. so glad we mentioned this at what is the end.
That was my answer. I looked him dead in the eye, like, probably, yeah.
Wow.
It's a mental thing, isn't it? It's a mental disorder.
You feel that you are fully recovered now.
Yes, from the eating disorder, yes. Not from the body dysmorphia, though. I still nitpick at how my body image, and I still don't like looking at myself in the mirror. But yes, with regards to binge eating disorder, I don't binge eat. I haven't had an episode in ages. But I allowed myself to relearn how to balance and not having a list of banned foods and just eat whatever I want at the correct portion, you know, and it's perfectly fine that you crave pizza, that you crave pasta, that you crave chocolate. And yes, now I'm okay. And it feels so good. You know, last weekend we got pizza, and that the minute it hit my mind, I was like, oh, so good. Yeah, I got that adrenaline rush and that endorphin high. Before, I used to think like, oh my goodness, I'm going to gain weight. My coach is going to, you know, yell at me, blah, blah, blah. And I just ate my pizza, drank my glass of wine, and went to bed. And that's it.
Beautiful. What a journey. So one last question for everyone, because the show is coming to an end now. What advice or message would you give to young women who might be experiencing similar issues? Who wants to go first?
Not to the young women, to the parents of children.
Go for it.
Stop force feeding. They don't have to finish everything on their plate. Okay. If anything, it's your fault that you gave them too much food, for one thing. Stop body shaming yourself in front of your children. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, let yourself be. I mean, the concept of self-love is very difficult, at least, you know, speaking from personal experience. I don't think I can ever come to a certain point where I can say I can fully love myself. No, but I'm making that extra effort that in front of my children, I don't nitpick at what I eat, when I eat, how I eat, and what I look like. Mm-hmm. Because as I said, if children see you as their safe space, what you say in front of them will not be undone, ever.
It will be internalized in the long run. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very good advice. Rosanne?
I mean, my advice is to reach out. If you have a doubt or you're experiencing any of these difficulties, please do reach out. There are services, there are professionals available who would be ready to support you. And of course, having the initial conversation is not easy, but finding someone who you believe can understand what you're going through, and that can actually, you know, also support you maybe to seek the support that you actually need. So yes, and apart from that, to everyone else, to have an understanding, and to hopefully even through this having gained a little bit more awareness of what an eating disorder can look like, and of course to be a bit more compassionate towards ourselves and other people around us, whether they're going through an eating disorder or not. So, but I think even this concept of self-compassion is very important as well.
And we will be including some resources as well where you can find help if you're watching this and you believe maybe someone close to you or yourself might be going through this. There's also Darkan Al-Sahtek and multiple psychologists, but we will include some resources. Maya?
Basically, it's okay to enjoy foods that you think are going to, what is the word, make you feel as if you're a certain way when you're not. It's okay to enjoy a meal, even if it makes you anxious at first. The initial taste of food is okay, and nourishing yourself is healthy. And like you said, food isn't that scary at the end of the day. Like, you need to remember that you have control over it and it doesn't have control over you. I think that's my take on the advice.
Very powerful. Thanks. So thank you, Maya and Rosalie, for sharing your powerful stories with us today. And Roseanne, for all the work that you do within the sector and all the input. These conversations are just so important. And I feel like I learn something, even when it's a topic that I already know a bit about. And I hope that our audience can take away from this as much as I have. Until next time, keep the conversation going on the She Word community on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook and subscribe on YouTube. And we'll see you next time for the next conversation.